Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, January 14th. Representative Smith moves approval of the minutes from the January 13th meeting. Any discussion?
Grab mine, just so we have a backup.
I have one correction. So today is Wednesday the 14th, but the minutes say Monday, January 13th. Which is right? The minutes say that Monday was January 13th, I think. Yeah, so the chair will note that there's a correction of January 12th, which Representative Smith pointed out to me before the meeting and before he moved approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The minutes are approved. Members, we have two items on our agenda for today. The first is an overview of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. After that, we'll be doing an overview of unemployment insurance. So I think we might have some technology issues right now, but if we have Mr. McKinnon, if you're here, as whatever guests you want to bring with, it's your presentation. So,
hey Peggy.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Deed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In lieu of the technology problems that we're having right now, I think all of you have the handout with you. And there's a number of slides in here that we'll be going through. And once we get the computer up and running, we can hopefully switch to that. Sorry about this. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting Deed to present to you today. As mentioned, I'm Kevin McKinnon, the Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development. And I'd also like to introduce my colleague, Jeremy Hansen-Willis, who is the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development at our department. Our Commissioner, Katie Clark Sieben, sends her regrets. I think, as many of you may know, she is expecting twins and is on doctor-ordered bed rest. Though she can't be here in person, she is available by phone and by email to members if they should have any questions, as she is telecommuting and working full-time from home. As you know, Deed is the state's principal economic development agency. Our mission is to enhance the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities. We have over 1,500 dedicated statewide staff that support our workforce development, economic development, and research and analysis programs, all working together to make Minnesota more competitive. Our budget's about $800 million, $500 of which comes from the federal government, $200 of which is general funds, and about $100 million from other funds. We've also handed out summaries, I believe, of the work that we've done in each of your legislative districts. We're currently updating this for 2014, so what you see before you is 2013's version. We'll get you the new versions as soon as possible. Wonderful. Can you go to slide 3? Right here. Good. We're on slide 3 here. As mentioned, our work falls into three primary groups: workforce development, economic development, and our operations division. As you can see in the organizational structure, our operations division includes our administrative, fiscal, human resource, government affairs, team communications, labor market office, economic analysis unit, and agency performance management. Our workforce development division includes disability determination, the Governor's Workforce Development Council, State Services for the Blind, Unemployment Insurance, Vocational Rehab Services in the Workforce Development Division. And finally, our economic development area includes the Office of Broadband, the Minnesota Trade Office, and the Business Community Development Division. We also oversee the work of the Independent Public Facilities Authority and Explore Minnesota Tourism. As you'll see, we'll group these programs a little differently today than they appear in your MMB summary narratives. Within the operations section of DEED, I wanted to talk about a little bit more visible unit that we have there. Our research and analysis teams provide expert analysis of the labor market conditions and trends, economic impact, and program performance that serve businesses, job seekers, and communities across the state. In particular, DEED is home to the Minnesota State Labor Market Information Office, which is funded by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. Our LMI team produces a number of data tools that help drive our work to ensure businesses have the workers that they need and that Minnesotans have opportunities for quality employment. We found over the years that this data has been invaluable to both members of the legislature as well as your constituents. Some of the trends that we study are quarterly statistics on employment and wages, job vacancy estimates, occupational employment and wage estimates, demographics of unemployment insurance claimants, business dynamics, and occupations in demand. So from an economic snapshot perspective, these data show that our economy is strong and growing stronger. At 3.7%, our unemployment rate is the lowest that it's been since 2001, and much lower than the national unemployment rate of 5.8%. We attained pre-recessionary levels of employment in 2014. We also saw unemployment benefits claims drop to the lowest level since before the recession last year. We've added 50,000 jobs in the last year alone, 230,000 seasonally adjusted jobs since the end of the recession in September of 2009. This success today and in the past is not by accident. The question before us today is how do we keep this momentum going in an environment where the only constant is change? And how can Minnesota compete and win in the 21st century global economy? What has helped us thrive in the past is what will continue to grow our success in the future, along with conscious investments in talent, innovation, and trade. Our first unit that we'll talk about is economic development, for which I'm responsible for. Our charge is to make sure that Minnesota is always a place that business can thrive and grow, and we're seeing the fruits of that labor every day as we help existing businesses expand and add new jobs as well as welcome new businesses to the state. Our business assistance units provide tools for starting a business, managing a business, financing a business, expanding or relocating a business. Our trade office is focused on an important piece of creating a healthy economy, strong exports, and foreign direct investment. Our community assistance programs, including our broadband development, provide important tools to build strong communities where businesses can grow and thrive. Almost everything that we do is in partnership with city and county governments, public and private partnerships, and other community-based organizations. We could not do this work without them, and they also rely upon these state programs to make their area competitive and certainly to help their business community grow. The Business Community Development Division operates a number of programs and provides financial and technical assistance to businesses, communities, and economic development professionals across the state in support of the job creation, expansion, attraction, and retention of businesses in and to Minnesota. Within this part of the agency, we have several business units with distinct purposes. Our business development specialists, of which we have six, five are located and stationed in Greater Minnesota. One is stationed in the Twin Cities. These folks work closely with companies, local units of government, and other development organizations to help businesses locate and expand in their communities. A lot of work goes into facilitating expansions and bringing new businesses into Minnesota, and this team helps guide and steer that process in concert with all of our partners. As the world continues to shrink and our economy becomes more globalized, the competition for attracting fast-growing companies and stable investments is fierce. Businesses often have a variety of worldwide locations they consider for expansions, and particularly when site location attributes and assets are similar, it takes a competitive financial package to make these job creation opportunities a reality. And in that spirit, we operate the business finance office that runs loan and grant programs that help companies and communities retain existing jobs and create new ones. Even with the investments made in 2013 that I'll talk about later, our programs remain very modest in this area compared to those offered by many other states And the resources that we do have, however, do give us a seat at the table and the opportunity to highlight our excellent workforce, our high quality of life, and many other business advantages that we have here in Minnesota. Not all businesses are eligible for deed programs. Qualifying businesses must meet specific job and job creation and wage goals. Some are more general in nature. Some are targeted on different regions of the state. Some on targeted industries and targeted groups of people. Some of the business finance programs are well known, such as the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund. These are our two primary programs to attract and retain high quality jobs. Minnesota Investment Fund dollars are actually dispersed to local governments who then provide loans to private businesses. The program provides a cap of up to $1 million available in loans per project to support capital investment and job creation. We generally conserve these resources by limiting awards to $500,000, and historically most projects have received significantly less than that. The focus remains on industrial, manufacturing, and technology-related businesses. Just some examples of projects that we've done over the past year: Edmonton Trailer in Sartell, Northland Process Piping in Mora, Ice Castle Fish Houses in Cass County, Shutterfly in Shakopee, and Olympus in Brooklyn Park. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund, which was released in 2014, is a statewide pay-for-performance program that allows companies who are considering Minnesota to receive financial incentives if, and only if, they create at least 10 full-time positions and agree to invest at least $500,000 in real property investments. This program has two types of incentives: the job creation awards and the capital investment rebates. Generally, up to a cap of $1 million is available for these projects, and the actual number is based on the actual job creation and amount of investment that the company does make. Examples of these projects that we've done statewide include Iconics in Duluth, Team Industries in Detroit Lakes, North Star Mutual in Cottonwood, Anderson in Bayport, and Super Radiator Coils in Chaska. With both of these programs, we're excited to report that we are on track to spending the allocation that we have, the appropriation that we have, by the end of the biennium. And we've been very fortunate to have this number of expansions here in our state over the past couple of years. Other business finance programs you may have heard of include the Urban Initiative Loan Program, the Innovation Voucher Program, and the State Small Business Credit Initiative. Our business finance team also operates several tax credit programs in conjunction with the Department of Revenue. The most well-known would be the Angel Investor Tax Credit, which provides a 25% tax credit to investors or investment funds that put money into startup companies focused on high technology, new proprietary products and technology and services. A total of $16 million in credits is available, $7.5 million of that. Of which $6.5 million remains is set aside for Greater Minnesota for minorities and women. The remaining $8.5 million is available to Twin Cities area, and there's $6.2 million in credits remaining there. Other tax credits that we administer include the Greater Minnesota Job Expansion Program, the Data Center Tax Exemption, and the Border City Enterprise Zones. Another tool that we have to help businesses expand and grow and remain productive is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership. This program works strategically with businesses and educational institutions to train or retrain workers, expand work opportunities, and keep high-quality jobs in the state. MJSP grants are used to offset training-related expenses in developing curriculum to be implemented by the higher education institution and business together. Well, you hear a lot of about what DEED does for the business, larger business expansions. We do also have a small business assistance office that places special emphasis on providing in-depth information that's so crucial to business success, yet too costly for many businesses, businessmen and women, to obtain on their own. We help reduce that expense in terms of time, in terms of money, time, expertise, and lost opportunity for startups and established businesses alike by offering individual consultation services along with comprehensive series of guidebooks. We also provide small business assistance through our Small Business Development Center network. It's a network of 9 offices across the state in partnership with higher education institutions. It's a federal program run through the Small Business Administration that we administer that provide advice and consulting to small companies. We also have 26 satellite centers in many of the communities across the state that are affiliated with the 9 major centers. So by the numbers, the Business Community Development Division has awarded $14.1 million in MIF loans, Minnesota Investment Fund loans, for the current biennium that's leveraged to about $400 million in private investment and helped to create nearly 2,000 jobs. Of these 41 projects, 22 are in Greater Minnesota, 19 are in the Twin Cities Metro. As far as the Job Creation Fund, about $13.5 million has been awarded from that program that has helped spur $251 million in projected spending and helped to create over 1,300 new jobs. Of the 27 projects approved to date, 14 are in Greater Minnesota and 13 are in the Twin Cities. Our programs also have leveraged $50 million in early stage investments through the Angel Tax Credit Program, trained more than 10,000 workers through our JobSchools partnership, assisted more than almost 30,000 small business clients through our SBDC and Small Business Assistance Office. We've accomplished these impressive results with very modest staff, responsible for 27 federal and state programs and providing assistance to businesses and communities statewide.
Mr. McKinnon, I'll ask you a couple of questions, so maybe
sure.
Get a chance to get a drink of water and not have to talk the whole time. First of all, you mentioned earlier the data center tax incentive program. Is there a sunset date on that program, or is that now permanent?
It offers 20 years. I believe it's through, I could get you the date on that. I believe it's through 2045 or 2049. We can get you the exact date on that.
And can you just run through the particulars of what that program is, how it works?
The data center program deeds responsibility in this is to essentially verify that a company has expanded into 25,000 square feet or more of data center space and is investing more than $30 million in eligible costs. And for that, there's a sales tax exemption that exists for 20 years. And so our role is to verify that. Obviously, the Department of Revenue is the one that approves that. We do the initial approval.
And then my second question would be, can you just tell the members of the committee, we see that DEED has 51.4 FTEs. What does a 0.4 FTE look like? How do you work with that kind of person?
The 51.4 would be a function of the number of staff.
Mr. McKinnon, it wasn't a serious question. I was telling
you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
If you actually want to answer the question seriously, I guess you can go ahead.
It's the amount of monies that we have dedicated to employees, and whether or not we have a 0.4 or not, I don't believe we do.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. McKinnon. We'll go back to my favorite program, Minnesota Angel Investment Tax Credit. Has that moved anywhere from the, maybe Edina up to Maple Grove? Have you expanded that program at all? Out of those, 5 cities that get it?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the program has expanded with $7.5 million available in Greater Minnesota and to minorities and to women. To date, again, this program has been open for 2 weeks thus far in 2015, and close to $2 or $3 million has already been allocated to different projects, of which many are meeting the, $1 million of that is meeting the other criteria that you have pointed out between the women, minority, and Greater Minnesota. As far as plotting the where they are to date, we have not done that.
Representative Mahoney.
And Mr. Chair, to the members of the committee, those who have been on this committee understand, and Mr. McKinnon also understands where I was going. For 5 years, the Angel Investment Tax Credit essentially was Western Hennepin County. $50 million tax credit for Western Hennepin County, and not by our it was just our mistake. We always took the word of the venture capitalists that they would actually get in their cars and drive other places around the state. I would love to get an update on where, I think you just said that $1 million, Mr. McKinnon, I think you just said $1 million went out in the last week, 2 weeks, that was in Greater Minnesota. Is there a way that you can update me or the committee, weekly, monthly, quarterly, on where this money is going? Because I'm fearful that it will fall into the same old habit. So can you update us on where that money is going, whether it's probably not today, but in the next week or two?
Mr. McKinnon, and after you answer Representative Mahoney's question, if maybe you could just provide a very brief overview for members of the committee who may not be familiar with the Angel Investor Tax Credit Program. Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we can provide an overview and update periodically here, as well as posted on our website, which we do as well. The $1 million that actually is out, I'm not exactly sure right now if that's Greater Minnesota, if that's women, if it's minorities, but we can certainly get the update to that. The Angel Tax Credit Program, as I mentioned earlier, is a 25% tax credit for investors in funds and investment funds that invest in early stage technology companies here in the state. It is a very successful program that we've had since 2010, I believe. And normally in the year we're allocated about $15, $16 million in credits. Those credits are typically used up within the first month or two of the year, which then makes it available to the investors who make qualified investments in the companies. Once they make those investments in the companies, they realize the credit and are able to claim that on their taxes the following year.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, any follow-up? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to follow up a little bit on the venture capital, I believe it was last year in Chair Mahoney's committee, we had some testimony on venture capital, and if I remember correctly, there had been a significant decrease in the amount of venture capital that comes into the state of Minnesota. So when you bring the other information that Chair Mahoney was talking about, could you also bring something that would give us some sort of a historical perspective and kind of the trend lines in a year-by-year basis on venture capital?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKinnon, question, new guy here, business guy out in 17B District, Wilmer. And as a business person, I guess I'm kind of wanting to understand the global question about how silos work in some of your departments and or even outside your departments. But as I visit with a lot of the business folks and larger manufacturing out in our district, out in Candiwai County, I struggle with the great work that you're doing on so many levels of helping create jobs and skilled workers. I work closely with our county folks as well. How is your department working, and what's your relationship with the MPCA when it comes to their, what I hear in a lot of the boardrooms and from the larger CEOs, that there is such a roadblock of creating more jobs and incentives. Are you working with that department closely? Do you let them know what we're hearing out there? I'm just curious how the relationship is. I don't want to get into MPCA stuff. I just want to know what your relationship is with that department that seems to be, from my angle, hurting your results. If you could answer that, please. Thank you.
Mr. McKinnon, do you dislike the MPCA as much as I do? Learn to answer that one. Answer Representative Baker's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker. Our relationship with the MPCA is obviously good, a sister agency. We do coordinate something called the Minnesota Business First Stop team, which is essentially a group of nine commissioners throughout several agencies that actually touch projects related to permitting and other things that other agencies can bring to the table when we do have business development projects. As far as the MPCA directly is concerned, we have worked on several projects in concert with the MPCA over the past year, and I'll just generally speak across the last year, but we have worked with the MPCA for a number of years. This is not new. Over the past year, we've worked on several projects, and primarily around the air permitting area. If manufacturers are doing paint booths and those types of things, the MPCA has been helpful certainly to us and certainly to the businesses that we've worked with in helping to arrange and let people know what they need to do in order to get that permit.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. Well,
thank you. All right. Any other questions? Mr. McKinnon, if you could continue with your presentation.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Jeremy? We also know that to attract and keep businesses, jobs, and people, communities need many things. Sound housing, ample commercial and industrial property, healthy drinking water, wastewater, solid infrastructure, and so on. To make these more affordable, we provide financial assistance to communities statewide for projects that help them stay vital and better position them for new economic growth. Our community assistance programs include the redevelopment program, which helps communities with the cost of redeveloping blighted industrial, residential, or commercial sites and putting that land back into productive use. And we also have the contamination cleanup and investigation program, which helps pay for the assessment and cleaning of contaminated sites for public or private development. We operate several other infrastructure programs, such as the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, and the Transportation Economic Development Program. We're also responsible for managing a large number of public projects that are passed by the legislature and the governor in the even years, 32 projects in last session. More recently, DEED has begun to focus more on the critical role that broadband access plays in economic development. Policymakers set a number of critical goals in 2010, and chief among them was that the state of Minnesota committed to achieving border-to-border access to moderate levels of broadband service to every home in the state by 2015. Number two was achieving a top ranking among states in the adoption and use of broadband technologies. Approximately 75% of Minnesota households have access to broadband at or above state speed goals. Over 300,000 households still need such service. The Office of Broadband Development, which was created at DEED, serves as a focal point for Minnesota's efforts to achieve a leadership position in the availability, speed, and use of broadband to ensure that our citizens and our communities are able to fully participate in today's digital society and have increased access to economic, health, education, and social opportunities statewide. Estimates suggest that the total statewide cost of achieving broadband goals is somewhere between $900 million and $3.2 billion. But the state of Minnesota is only one piece of that. There are several contributors, that, including the federal government and private providers, that will continue to build infrastructure into underserved areas where they can achieve strong returns on investment. Infrastructure funding allows DEED to address the needs left unmet by the private sector in areas that are not otherwise on providers' investment horizon. By the numbers, our community assistance programs, I know I mentioned that we manage a lot of pass-through funding from the previous year. We do about $180 million in bonding and public infrastructure programs. That's leveraged by about $180 million in match funding. About 25%, as I mentioned earlier, of our households still do not have access to high-speed broadband access as of April of 2014. And later this month, we expect to serve just under 7,000 households with the fiscal year 15 funding that was appropriated to DEED in the amount of $20 million for the border-to-border broadband program.
Mr. McKinnon, we have a question from a member here, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKinnon, you talked a little bit about broadband and state and federal dollars here in Minnesota. How are those two coordinated? Who is responsible for kind of bringing those two programs together so there's not duplication and so forth?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. In our process that we have to evaluate grants, we obviously look at funding sources and what sources are already in there and what other sources of funding that our communities and projects have asked for, which often includes federal dollars as well. There's a great relationship that already exists between our broadband director, Dana McKenzie, and certainly the FCC and others at the federal level, and so there is coordination amongst that as to who can fund what and at what levels. There already is that coordination, and we'll continue along that path as we implement these grants.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair and Mr. McKinnon, the dollars that we appropriated in the last legislative sessions, do those leverage federal, are there any leverages of federal dollars along those lines, do you know?
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I believe there are federal dollars in a lot of those programs, or in some of those projects. In other cases, some projects that we wouldn't need to put our money into are taken care of with the federal dollars, and some projects that the federal government isn't participating in, we will take those. We've taken those projects.
Mr. McKinnon.
Next slide, please. Finally, in the Economic Development Division, our Minnesota Trade Office exists to promote economic prosperity by increasing the state's export and foreign direct investment. Exports of manufactured goods, services, and agricultural commodities to foreign countries are an extremely important part of Minnesota's economy, accounting for $33 billion in revenue annually and tens of thousands of jobs statewide. This is important because these goods are worth more on a global market. They take higher skill to make, and thus bringing more money back into the state of Minnesota that can then be recirculated amongst our economy. Through training and expertise that small and mid-sized companies need to export goods and services successfully worldwide, the Trade Office helps Minnesota companies turn opportunities into profits in foreign markets across the globe. Our international trade reps guide companies through the challenges of conducting international business, from basic guidance to companies new to exporting to technical, regulatory, and logistical information, for more experienced companies to market intelligence and research to the art of conducting business across borders and cultural exchanges. Our trade reps have answers to the most pressing questions. We also provide direct assistance to Minnesota's manufacturers and service providers, focusing primarily on small and medium-sized companies. Several programs provide grants, loans, and others that help new exporters make their first foreign sales or help current exporters expand into new markets. Our STEP program, which is a state export program, our largest program in this area, provides financial and technical assistance to qualifying Minnesota businesses with an active interest in exporting products and services to foreign markets. Participants in this program that are eligible for up to $7,500 to help them establish contacts and markets outside of the U.S. Maybe first-time exporters or companies that are currently exporting but are interested in expanding their markets. Finally, in this area, we maintain four offices across the globe in key international markets, including Brazil, China, Germany, and South Korea. This is not only to help foreign companies explore investments here back into Minnesota, but also to help our companies access those markets across the globe.
I think the committee is going to have to visit some of those locations to research those offices. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the last couple of years, we directed some resources and concern to the Trade Office to try to help us utilize our East African population here in terms of the concentration, largest diaspora, for example, of Somali people and so on. And I'm just wondering if you can give me an update on how that's going, how we're doing with that effort.
Mr. McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would respectfully ask that I could get back to you with that information.
Okay.
I'm not up to speed with where they are with that initiative at the moment, but
okay.
Be happy to get you the most up-to-date information.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McKinnon, I know three of the four offices have just been opened in the in the recent past. So I would suspect you get the most activity through your China office. But if you could, at some point through email, kind of what's the number of churns going through Brazil and Germany and South Korea, and how much you believe, or if there's any way of measuring how much our trade has increased with the Brazil, Germany, and South Korea, because those are the three new offices China's been around for a long time. And if you could just pass that along to myself or the committee assistant, and he could pass it out to the committee, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. McKinnon, is the one in Germany, is that in Dusseldorf?
It is. Yeah, okay. In Dusseldorf, yes.
Any other questions from members of the committee before we continue with the presentation? Please continue.
Thank you. So by the numbers, with our trade office, about 1,000 organizations received export assistance. Almost 1,200 people attended our training seminars that we do to outreach to companies to get them interested in exporting. That was a general overview of our economic development programs. Now, please, the chair, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague.
Before we do that, Representative Vogel has a question. Representative Vogel.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Mr. McKenna, just curious, there's a lot of bonding that's going on. Where is that authorized and then monitored?
Mr. McKenna.
Mr. Chair, members, the bonding is authorized for us in many of these pass-through appropriations, obviously by the legislature and what the governor agrees to in the even-year session. Other bonding appropriations that we get for the Greater Minnesota Business Public Infrastructure Program, we would get an allocation of, let's say, $5 million, and a community would then apply to us, and we would make sure that they meet the guidelines and then implement a portion of that. We offer about up to $500,000 for those types of deals.
Yeah. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and I am going to give some of our new committee members a heads up. Whenever DEED uses as a pass-through for bonding dollars, all those dollars, they have to do, they have to be owned by a public entity. So you can't do that. You can't use any bonding dollars for any private job creation. And you have to be careful because the last biennium there was a substantial amount of cash that was put in so that they could get around that. Hopefully the new chair will continue that trend.
Of getting around it? Or
getting around the state ownership or the public ownership of job creation or facilities that are being used for job creation. Just a heads up and check where the bond money can be used before you plan on asking DEED to help your communities with it.
Any other questions from members of the committee? All right, we'll move on to the workforce development portion of the meeting. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record so 100 years from now they know who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Hansen-Willis, and I am the Deputy Commissioner at DEED for Workforce Development, and thank you for having us here today to give you an overview of the workforce programs that we administer and run at DEED. As you know, workforce development is a key component of keeping Minnesota economically competitive. DEED has a number of programs and services that we administer to connect employees to employers of all backgrounds, including adults from communities of color, adults with disabilities, and young people. We operate a number of these services connected to our statewide network of workforce centers that provide resources for all Minnesotans who need help getting forward with their career. These services are critical to help people achieve their career goals to support themselves and their families. Before I dive directly into the programs of our workforce division, I think it's important to take a brief moment and set the context of the economy that we're in right now and our labor force as a whole. When companies outside of Minnesota are looking to expand or relocate, Minnesota is often on the short list because we have what every company needs, a highly qualified workforce that will get the job done. Minnesota's economy is currently on track, growing jobs and new opportunities for people throughout the state. As Kevin noted, we've added more than 200,000 jobs in the last 5 years. Minnesota ranks third in the nation for our labor force participation, fourth in the nation for people with a high school degree, and 11th in the nation for people with a bachelor's degree or higher. From CNBC to Forbes to the Kauffman Foundation, Minnesota is often recognized for its high quality of life and excellent workforce. That said, currently we face a series of challenges facing our economic resurgence. First is the fact that not all Minnesotans are enjoying this economic resurgence, and second of all, that our labor force is undergoing dramatic changes. As large numbers of baby boomers retire, an estimated 215,000 individuals will leave the workforce in the coming years. As you can see from this chart, by just the 2020s, we anticipate that labor force growth rate in our state will be at record low levels as these aging trends continue. This looming labor shortage is the greatest challenge facing Minnesota's continued economic growth, which will have adverse effects on both the economic security of Minnesota workers and the ability of Minnesota businesses to thrive. Simply put, we need all Minnesotans who want to work participating in the labor force in order to meet the demands of our growing economy. To address these trends, DEED is focused on several types of employment disparities that exist in our state, disparities by race and ethnicity, by people with disabilities, and young people. As our population gets older, it's also diversifying both ethnically and racially. Nearly all the population growth in Minnesota for the last 12 years has been in communities of color, and this trend will continue. These communities of color were hit harder by the recession and have recovered more slowly since the recession. While the overall unemployment rate is at 3.7%, Black Minnesotans, for example, experience unemployment of 10%. Hispanic and American Indian Minnesotans also face significantly higher unemployment rates. These disparities based on race and ethnicity have a devastating effect on many Minnesotans, their livelihoods, their families, and their economic security. In light of this looming labor shortage, these disparities also signify a missed opportunity for our economy, a great untapped resource with enormous potential to benefit the growth and shared prosperity for Minnesota businesses throughout the state. Young people also have employment disparities in our state. Unemployment for Minnesota young people ages 16 to 24 is nearly 10%, more than twice the overall unemployment rate. And since Minnesota young workers are the most diverse, this high unemployment rate disproportionately affects young people of color. In addition to the financial benefits, employment provides young people with a chance to acquire occupational skills and broader employment, such as communication, teamwork, and problem-solving skills that will help them become valuable members of the workforce into the future. We also need to address the employment disparities among people with disabilities. 12% of Minnesota's population, age 16 and over, has a disability. The employment rate for these individuals is 24%, compared with 83% of the broader population. In Minnesota, 85% of those served by public mental health systems, for example, are unemployed. This employment disparity results in much higher levels of poverty, poverty among people with disabilities, and poses a threat to the future economic growth of Minnesota. So in order to meet the needs of our growing economy, we must maximize every Minnesotan with the skills required for Minnesota's growing businesses.
If you just, Mr. Hanson-Willis, I almost called you doctor, but I won't do that. That's the other one. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you go on, one of the things that, and this maximizing workforce is all to the good, but one of the things we heard about a week ago from the state demographer was we are experiencing out-migration of millennials. Can you help us understand who those millennials are and why they're out-migrating?
Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not being the state demographer, I don't know if I'm in the best person to suggest the reason behind all of those trends. But we do know that second to the size of the baby boomer population, the millennials represent the next largest size of the demographic group of our state. And as they eventually merge into the workforce, the pendulum will shift, but that's about 20 years away. And so we know that we have the immediate need to respond to the aging of our baby boomers, as well as making sure that we are a place that millennials continue to call home and making sure that they have the opportunities to find employment here in Minnesota.
Representative Wagenius.
That doesn't answer my question. I think we need to see the numbers and maybe to understand those numbers. I mean, who is leaving the state? What ages are leaving the state? And what are they folks with college degrees? Or are they folks without high school diplomas? We need to know who's leaving. That's that part of our demographic scares me, that we're losing this population. So it's one thing to talk about the folks who stay and making sure that they're all up to doing everything they can do. I totally agree with that. But we ought to be looking at the folks who are leaving. And if it's an out-migration of young people, that to me is scary.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think you bring up a good point. Maybe one of the items we'll add to a future committee agenda is we'll have the Office of Demography come in, or the State Demographic Office, what they're called. Maybe we'll have them come in. We could spend probably a committee hearing just talking about the demographic shifts that have taken place in Minnesota in the last 20 years, mm-hmm. and understanding where that's going under a larger umbrella of nationwide what's happening. So, for example, one of the many factors that's influencing behavior is culturally we're just becoming less tolerant of cold weather. There's just a lot of factors that are playing into that, but when you give people the option of shoveling snow in May or not shoveling snow in May, they tend to choose not to shovel snow in May. But I think it's a really good point that maybe we should have the demographer's office come in. We can talk about that. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. I think it'd be good to understand how many of those folks are folks who would don't want to shovel snow in May, and how many of them would actually like to go skiing in February. I mean, I think we need to be able to really dive deeply into why we're losing those folks.
You know, if snow is the problem, perhaps you and Representative Neuberger can work together. We can expand Sherco. We'll warm the state up even more, and
we
things will be
that.
Fine. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair.
Hold on. Representative Johnson, we'll get to you, Representative Mahoney. Don't worry. Or you can ignore me and go ahead and talk anyways, Representative Mahoney.
Earlier today, you said you needed to be more careful.
Yeah, I know. It sounded funny inside my head. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, are you going to be proposing some new solutions or some kind of coordinated effort to deal with these employment disparities? Because I assume what has been going on hasn't worked as well as we hope. And then will you be providing, or do you have some base numbers that we can look at and then compare at a later date to see what improvements have been made in this area?
Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Much of my presentation today will talk about the programs that we have actually designed to address this challenge. Obviously, DEED is one agency, even in the state government, is one player to address racial disparities in employment. Obviously, it's a high priority for us. We believe that we have programs in place that are helping to make a difference. So stay tuned, and if you have additional questions about what we are or could be doing, we can take those later. But that's what I'll be getting to in just a minute.
Representative Johnson.
And then the base numbers, do you have actual numbers with respect to the disparities so we'd, that we could look at, that you could provide?
Mr. Hanson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, we can provide employment and unemployment breakdown numbers by age, gender, race, geography. Yes.
So we'll take questions from Representative Metza and O'Neill, and then we're going to let Mr. Hanson-Willis get back to his presentation. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More just a point of clarification for my constituents back home. We love snow.
Okay, great.
And I was wondering if we might be able to get a carve-out from that broad general statement for the range.
Yeah, you bet. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. I actually have a real question. Mr. Hanson-Willis, you had mentioned about the disability population here in Minnesota, that it's about 12% ages 16 and above, and only 24% are actually employed. Do you have that as a comparison across the nation, and how do we rank?
Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have that information in front of me or off the top of my head at the moment. Generally, I think Minnesota is considered to have a robust system to help people with disabilities find employment, but to provide the exact numbers, I'd want to get back to you.
If you could, please, I'd be of great interest to me. Thank you.
Then was there, I didn't realize Representative Metz's question was going to be that quick. Was there another question? Representative Neuberger, and then we'll move on with the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I have is, I have three daughters. They're young adults. They've all entered the workforce. One of the biggest areas of frustration for them is that they can't work more than 29 hours a week. All three of them are working at different places, and it's proven to be quite a hardship. Two of my daughters have to work two jobs because they can't work full-time at their one job. So would you just touch on a little bit the 29-hour rule, how that's affected our employment numbers, and how that's kind of affected the state as a whole? If you just touch on that, what's your opinion on that?
Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Mr. Chair, members, unfortunately that's a little bit outside of the scope of our agency in my experience. We'd be glad to connect you with the Department of Labor and Industry or other department that would be better able to answer that question.
Any additional questions? Then we'll continue with the presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as clearly as important as setting this context and understanding their environment is, we actually do have a lot of programs that I'm eager to talk about today that are helping us respond to these challenges. Now, one of our most critical tools in helping keep our workforce strong is our unemployment insurance division. This program provides unemployment insurance to individuals and employers and provides stability to local economies by helping to maintain spending during economic downturn, support dislocated workers while they obtain training so they can re-enter the labor market, and ensures that skilled workers do not leave an area in search of other work during periods of unemployment. Now, I won't go into more detail here because following our presentation, you will be hearing a more detailed overview of our unemployment insurance program by our director, Mr. Rick Caligiuri. Let me start with our adult workforce development programs. DEED's adult workforce development programs support Minnesotans seeking new employment through partnerships designed to develop and improve career skills and obtain employment at family-sustaining wages. Although focused on job seekers, all of our workforce development programs, we work very closely with business to respond to their needs in recruiting and training current and future workforces. It is imperative that our job seekers are being trained and prepared for jobs that are in demand in the current and future marketplace. We serve many different adult populations through a variety of both state and federally funded programs. Our 48 workforce centers all across the state and a significant portion of our federal funding goes towards the general Minnesota customer who is seeking greater participation in the labor force. In addition to these general services that we provide to every Minnesotan looking to get to work or advance their career, we have specific programs to help specific categories of Minnesotans. DEED helps workers who have lost their job through no fault of their own with the help of finding a new career. The Dislocated Worker Program, which is funded with both state and federal money, assists laid-off workers in returning to a job with comparable wages and benefits to help them get This helps them get career planning and counseling, job search and placement, short-term training, and support services for things like family care and transportation. Educationally underprepared adults who face barriers to employment are served by two complementary programs. Our state-funded Minnesota Fast Track Career Pathways program provides basic skills education and career-specific training in education and fields where their new skills are in high demand by employers. Secondly, the state-funded Adult Workforce Competitive Grant Program provides individuals with disabilities, those returning to work after receiving public assistance, racial and ethnic minorities, employment and training to help them increase their employment earnings and occupational skills. Now, these state funds have been particularly important and crucial in this area, where, again, our federal funding is mostly used to provide general training and support to the general Minnesota customer, and these state dollars allow us much more flexibility and financial support to serve some of these specific Minnesotans with their specific needs. DEED also administers a federally funded program for veterans that provides job readiness, assessment, preparation, and job placement for veterans. Our Veteran Employment Services staff are veterans themselves, bringing firsthand knowledge and experience to this important program. So, the outcomes by the numbers of our adult workforce programs. As you can see here, our adult workforce development saw strong results in fiscal year 2013, with nearly 230,000 job seekers receiving employment. More than 70% of our adult workforce development program participants, some of the individuals with the highest barriers to employment, entered employment upon exiting the program. Our Fast Track Career Pathways program participants saw a 47% increase in their wages. More than 583,000 Minnesotans used the Workforce Center resource areas, and nearly 80,000 attended Workforce Center job training workshops. 84% of our dislocated worker participants entered employment after exiting the program, and 84% of our federally funded adult program participants were employed upon exiting the program.
Mr. Hanson-Willis, for the other funds, is that primarily going to be the primary funding source? Would that be the Workforce Development Fund?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
DEED also provides workforce development services for youth who are often from low-income families and face barriers to employment. These are the young people at greatest risk for suffering severe setbacks in life without the extra help in hand and guidance in their formative years. Our youth workforce programs include federally funded services and state funded programs. First, our Youth Build program, for example, offers a construction career pathway for at-risk young people and young adults who have dropped out of school or experienced repeated failure in school. It provides these youth with industry-recognized credentials and pre-apprenticeship training, contextual basic skills like work readiness and leadership. The state-funded Youth at Work program, which was previously known as the Youth Workforce Development Competitive Grant Program, much shorter name, provides workforce development and training to economically disadvantaged or at-risk youth. The Youth at Work program has special consideration for youth from communities of color and youth with disabilities. Finally, the state-funded Minnesota Youth program provides summer and year-round employment and training for economically disadvantaged youth statewide. The Minnesota Youth Programs allows these youth to apply classroom skills and abilities to real work settings while earning a paycheck. So the outcome numbers for our youth workforce development programs. More than 3,800 of our youth were served under the federal programs in partnership with our local workforce boards and youth councils. The older youth in these programs that were served, 81% entered employment, 92% retained employment, 60% attained a credential or degree, all well above the federal goals that are established for Minnesota. For the Youth Build, 409 youth were served by the Youth Build program, 93% of whom obtained a high school diploma or GED. 85% of Youth Build participants entered employment, post-secondary education, apprenticeships, or the military, and 93% earned an industry-recognized credential other than a diploma or a GED. Our Youth at Work program saw 9,400 youth served by this program, 98% of whom received career planning advice. And lastly, the Minnesota Youth program served nearly 3,400 youth, 90% of whom attained work readiness and education goals. DEED also serves people with disabilities. Our vocational rehabilitation program supports Minnesotans whose disabilities cause severe and serious functional limitations to achieve their employment goals. More than 300 vocational rehabilitation counselors within the Minnesota workforce system deliver these services that include vocational evaluation, training, counseling, assistive technology, and job placement. This program is jointly funded by the state and federal governments. Some customers receive also post-employment assistance. Our state-funded extended employment program provides ongoing employment support services to Minnesotans with significant disabilities to help them not only maintain but advance their employment. The programs contract with 31 community programs that provide this important ongoing support to meet the needs of people with disabilities who want to work and employers who need qualified workers. We also provide specialized support for people with serious mental illness. Our state-funded individual placement and support program is a unique collaborative model between multiple agencies that meets the unique needs of this very specialized population. This model includes long-term job supports, helping individuals not only find work, but have training and retraining for on-the-job tasks, managing changes both in the work and non-work environment to help them continue to advance in their career. IPS, the Individual Placement and Support Program, is different in that it provides these employment services within an individual's overall mental health treatment. And finally, our Independent Living Program helps Minnesotans with disabilities to live with greater independence, contribute their talents and creativity, expand their options, and secure their basic rights in areas such as housing, transportation, education, and employment. These services are funded through state and federal grants to 8 community-based centers for independent learning and include things like independent living skills, counseling, support groups, transportation assistance to work, work modification, and other services. Now, many of these services that are provided for people with disabilities are delivered through collaborative partnerships across the state. For example, our vocational rehabilitation program leverages significant federal funding through these public-private partnerships, and nearly 80% of these services are federally funded. So the outcome numbers for this work with people with disabilities and our vocational rehabilitation effort shows that in fiscal year 14, our vocational rehabilitation division served more than 19,000 Minnesotans. More than 2,800 obtained employment through our vocational rehabilitation. The individual placement and support program helped 1,200 customers, served with 58% attaining employment, returning a total wages of $2.6 million for our economy. In the independent living program, more than 7,000 people were served. In the extended employment program, nearly 5,000 people were helped, generating almost $28 million in wages for them and Minnesota's economy. And through these wages earned by the program participants, the vocational rehab program achieves a return on investment of these dollars of nearly $9 for every $1 invested. DEED also helps Minnesotans who have vision loss or other disabilities such as learning disabilities or dyslexia that make reading difficult and employment a challenge. Now, we see a dramatic shift in Minnesota as the aging of our demographic. We anticipate the need for these services to potentially quadruple in future years. Our state services for the blind are comprehensive and designed to help individuals achieve personal and vocational independence and include providing adaptive technology and training to help these individuals meet the demands of today's workplace, as well as training in managing finances and travel and cane usage. For senior services, we provide seniors who are facing vision loss with tools and training and technology to remain independent and in their homes. And lastly, our communication center provides materials in accessible formats such as Braille, audio, and e-text, or education to help people maintain their independence.
Mr. Edson, we also have a question from Representative Clark.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just very pleased to see that when you got to the Vocational Rehab Division, you did give a number of the return on investment, almost $9 for every dollar invested. It's impressive. And I'm just wondering, I know that the youth programs have an impressive ROI too, and I'm just wondering, I didn't see that number here. Do you have that, or could you get that? And, you know, I just think throughout, whenever we're talking about what it takes to train people in the workforce, it's really helpful to know how that investment pays off. So if we could get those numbers and it helps us when we're deciding where to make our priorities.
Mr. Hanson Willis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we'd be glad to get you some of that information.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, thank you for the presentation. This seems as this is a finance committee. Can you share with the committee what the total workforce training dollars are that we spend as a state? Actually break it down or combined, I don't care, we can combine them. State dollars and federal dollars? I mean, is it $10 million or $120 million? And that, you know, excluding the vocational rehab, which is those with physical or mental handicaps, just how much are we spending?
Mr. Hanson-Willis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I think it would be the most efficient use of time if we provided that information separately, because it is, and we do have some actually very useful charts which help to understand the interplay between federal funding and state funding, especially because most of these programs utilize a combination of the two.
And Representative Mahoney, you're looking for state and federal funding on a biennial basis for?
I'd take biennial. I'll take by the year or whatever. It's. I'm not sure I understand, if I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Why is it that a chart would be more enhancing to understand this? I mean, it's a simple question. Did we spend $1 billion or $500 million or $100 million on workforce training? Because that will help me get to the next questions, which deal with return on investment and your accountability for that particular dollars and the services that you're providing.
Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a chart is not the only way that we can communicate that. I think it can be a helpful tool, and we would be glad to get that information to you. I think that in addition to any kind of overall performance metrics, each of these programs has very specific performance metrics, and some of which include return on investment.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, to build off of your, some of these programs have specific metrics of success. So are they all the same metrics, or are you asking this committee to make a financial decision comparing apples to oranges to apricots to peaches? In other words, can I look at a chart that says that this program trained this many people, employed this many people when it was all done, and they kept the job for a year or 10 years, or were these people coming back recycling through the particular program?
And more specifically, Representative Mahoney, I think that when the governor's budget comes out, what we'll be doing is we'll be going through the individual budget pages, which I think they still have performance metrics for the individual funds. Of those individual accounts, I know that'll be one of the things we'll be looking at when we go through those. But Mr. Hanson-Willis.
Mr. Chair, yes. I think our goal today was to provide a high-level overview of the programs and budget of our department. We would expect that a lot more information would be required for us to give to you in order to understand the programs more deeply and to make financial decisions about the future.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, then when you make that presentation, can you bring with you, just so you know, so that you don't tell us that you'll have to get back, or we'll get this information to you, how many people you trained, how many people got a job, and how long they held that job? Because as the past chair, I think you know, and some of the other people on this committee know, that I struggled for 2 years trying to get accountability measures into this particular set of programs. And let's just say I don't believe I was exceedingly successful. I got a few, but it is one of the programs that every workforce program, and this is kind of a speech to the committee, has a different metrics of success. And I strongly believe that it's a metrics of success to figure out a way so that none of us understand where the money's going and how it's being spent. So I would like any information you can give to this committee on this particular issue.
And, Mr. McKinnon and Mr. Hanson-Willis, I know we've got a lot of take-backs for information, and I don't want to behave as a gatekeeper, but it just may be easier unless you have a distribution list for all the members of the committee, to send it to Jonathan and to the committee legislative assistant, and he'll distribute it to the committee, not for the purposes of modifying the information or gatekeeping, but that way we can ensure every member of the committee gets it. Otherwise, if you want to create your own distribution list and send it to every member of the House, you are more than willing to do that as well. So, and Representative Mahoney, we all want better accountability, no matter how effective we are at our tax dollars. And so I think it's wise for you to focus on that and for us to build off the improvements you did last session. Mr. Hanson-Willis, I think back to your presentation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We just have a couple of slides yet remaining. As part of our work on serving people with disabilities, as you may know, in 1999, the U.S. Supreme Court decision, Olmstead versus LC, found that the American with Disabilities Act requires states to provide services to people with disabilities in the most integrated settings appropriate to their needs. The court came to this conclusion for two reasons. One, that segregation of individuals with disabilities perpetuates the notion that some individuals are incapable or unworthy of participating in community life, and that this kind of segregation severely diminishes a person's life, family relations, social contacts, work options, economic independence, occasional educational advancement, and cultural enrichment. And in 2011, the Minnesota Department of Human Services entered into a settlement agreement that required the development of a Minnesota-specific Olmstead plan. This plan was developed over 2 years by a committee that included individuals with disabilities, their family members, service providers, advocates, and an Olmstead sub-cabinet made up of 8 different agencies, including DEED, Corrections, Education, Health, Human Rights, Human Services, Transportation, and Housing, that was established by Governor Dayton. The goal of this plan, for example, includes commitments to individuals who are unnecessarily segregated in facilities for individuals with developmental disabilities, psychiatric hospitals, and nursing homes. To implement this plan upon the agreed-upon timeline, the state has established an Olmstead Implementation Office. DEED is the fiscal agent for this office, but we work with all of the agencies involved in state government to support the work of this office to implement the Olmstead Plan. Now, as a part of this, DEED is especially involved with implementing the Olmstead Plan requirements related to employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Both our vocational rehab services and state services for the blind staff are making changes to our programs to give customers more opportunities to receive employment services in the most integrated settings possible. Ultimately, we are committed to ensuring that Minnesotans with disabilities have the opportunity to be close to family, friends, to live independently, to engage in productive employment, and fully participate in community life. Federal court monitors are watching closely the progress of Minnesota's Olmstead Plan and ensuring that we comply with the settlement agreement. Some of the reforms we need to make cannot be accomplished overnight, but we, as DEED, working with the other agencies, are committed to working hard to achieve these goals. Now, lastly, Mr. Chair and members, I just want to acknowledge that DEED, of course, is not doing this work alone. We are but one agency with many partners. And what this last slide is hopefully helping to symbolize is the continuum of services and the other institutions and agencies which we work with to make sure that Minnesota has the best workforce in the world. The Department of Education, the Office of Higher Education, Department of Labor and Industry, Housing Finance, the University of Minnesota, our Minsky system, our Kelp system, are all key partners in creating strategies to strengthen our workforce to make sure that we continue our economic prosperity and meet the needs of businesses. Now, these services of the various agencies do complement each other and must complement each other to meet the various needs of the populations that we all seek to serve. And we work in close partnership with these agencies along this continuum to make sure that we have the world's best workforce and that keeps our economy growing. And lastly, Mr. Chair, as you can see from the totality of our presentation this morning, DEED's programs are intended to promote the talent, innovation, and trade that we think are required to keep our diverse economy moving. While our economy has made huge strides in recent years, we stand ready, we believe, to meet the challenges ahead. Our programs will continue to grow a strong and diverse workforce to face this coming labor shortage and help those, especially who are unemployed and face barriers to employment, to meet both their needs and the needs of Minnesota businesses. And with that, Mr. Chair, we thank you for your time and are open to any final or remaining questions.
Well, if anything, Mr. Hanson Willis, you're right on time. It is exactly 2 o'clock. Well done. Well done. Representative Fabian, you had a quick question before we move on to the next.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And to the part of the Olmsted Plan, you know, as policymakers and legislators, we do a lot of things with good intentions, and the courts do too, obviously. I'm curious to know about, you know, I've worked pretty closely with, quite frankly, some of my former students and their parents and providers of developmentally disabled clients in Roseau and the surrounding area. And, you know, you talk about this Olmsted Plan and people being integrated more, not being segregated, being closer to home. The reality in my area is that in a number of cases, we're doing just the opposite. The services are not being provided, so now they're being taken out of the Roseau community to go someplace else further away from home. And what I'm wondering about is, in working with our local agencies, is there flexibility so that we can make more of those decisions at the local level, working with parents, working with the developmentally disabled, and so forth, to make sure that they can stay in an environment that they truly do and like?
Mr. Hanson Willis.
Mr. Chair, members, I think that you point exactly to part of the challenge of our current situation and part of the reason for the court case and the settlement. We know we have much more work to do and much more improvement to see. The Olmsted Plan that I mentioned was just finalized last year and actually was brought forward to the federal court and the court monitor just at the end of the year. And so we're still at the beginning stages of implementing the plan. The focus of the plan are on key measurables and outcomes that will be expected of the state of Minnesota, so the outcome-based. Representative, what you point to is the how do we get there. And I think at the end of the day, what's very important for us is to not only make life better for people with disabilities, but to give them more options and more choices. It's not suggesting that there's a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach for the diversity of these folks in different parts of the state. But to provide more options and more choices in more parts of the state. And the example you suggest shows that we have work yet to do.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And please keep us informed as to what you're doing. I'm kind of interested to know exactly how you're going to come to those outcomes. Thank you.
Representative Scott, and then we're going to move on to UI.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, you stay here on the last page. You have a statement about the unemployment rate here. Do you have data on the underemployment rate and the household incomes compared to pre-recession versus now to get kind of a more accurate picture of how much the economy here has bounced back?
Mr. Hanson Willis.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we do have that information both on our website as well as we can get it more tailored for you. You're right to suggest that there's more to the picture behind the 3.7% unemployment rate. There are other Minnesotans that are not working full-time. There are other Minnesotans who have checked out of the workforce altogether as a result of the recession. And so we know it's not a complete picture, but we do have alternative forms of looking at the employment rate. And so, yes, we can get that information to you. It's also available on our website.
Thank you. I would look forward to just to getting that because I don't really have time to go to the website right now.
Thank you, Representative Scott. And I know we've asked a lot of information for you to send in your summary to the committee, but if you'd also provide just a historical tracking of the U3 and U6 unemployment rates and a quick definition for the members explaining what the differences are between those two rates, that'd be appreciated. But thank you again for your presentation today. We look forward to working with you this year as well as next. And please tell the doctor I said hi.
I will. Mr. Thanks. Chair, members, thank you so much for the opportunity. We look forward to working with you and providing more information as you need.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, members, we have the unemployment insurance taxes overview. And Mr. Caligiuri, is that how I say it? Welcome to the committee. And we have a copy of your presentation. Are you going to be using the monitors or not?
Mr. Chair, members, no, I'm not going to actually be going through that presentation. I provided that to you. It has a lot of information about the tax and financing side. I'm going to probably give you a little more general overview. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri, and I am the director of the Unemployment Insurance Program at Deed, and with me is my director of Appeals and Legal Affairs, Craig Gustafson, and Craig will provide some additional testimony as well. Basically, based on feedback that I've gotten from staff, I gauged that the interest of the committee was primarily on the financing side, so I provided a lot of information in this handout. But basically, the unemployment insurance program and running an unemployment insurance program, there are three components to it. First of all, there's the tax and finance side. We do collect taxes from Minnesota employers. Unemployment insurance system is funded 100% from employers, a payroll tax on employers. And then there's the benefit side, paying benefits to individuals who have been laid off through no fault of their own. And it is not an entitlement program. It's an eligibility-based program. Those individuals have to meet all the criteria of eligibility. And then thirdly, there's a legal aspect as well, and Craig heads that up. We do appeals, but it's a formal judiciary process where individuals and employers can appeal determinations. We do about anywhere from 20 to 30,000 UI appeals in a year. Mr. Chair, members, the state of the unemployment insurance system in Minnesota is very good. We were all states were challenged with the Great Recession. That was a huge challenge for every unemployment insurance system across the nation. About 36 states, Minnesota included, went deeply into debt because we collect the taxes from the employers. It goes into a federal fund. Each state has their own account in Washington, and it's called your state trust fund, and that's where you pay your benefits out of that trust fund. So the trick is for each state to manage a trust fund and their taxing situation such that they can basically run a pay-as-you-go kind of system. We are mandated by the federal government to have an experience-based system such that employers who lay off more pay more. And we have that in place as well, as do all states. There are some varieties among states of how it's done. The overall structure in Minnesota has been established over the last few decades by the legislature. And we also have a UI advisory council. And I think one of the successes of Minnesota, because we did recover very quickly from the recession, we were probably at the worst point in the recession, $700 million in debt to the federal government. And when the state trust fund runs out, the feds automatically advance you money. And again, about 36 states went into the red. I think there are still about 20 states that have not climbed out of debt. Minnesota came out of debt about 2 years ago. For example, Wisconsin, I believe, or our neighbor state Wisconsin, just came out of debt last quarter. And as I said, we've been out of debt for 2 years. So the way the system works is basically, going back to the basic, there's a federal unemployment insurance tax, and that's the federal agencies handle that. We don't. And then on top of that, there are state unemployment insurance taxes that are based, you know, the focus of those is to maintain a trust fund where you can pay benefits. The other major dynamic about Minnesota is our seasonality. We have basically a little mini recession every year about Thanksgiving because of our weather and our climate and our construction industry and roofing and gravel pits and resorts, etc. We're the most seasonal state in the United States. Maine is a close second. About 42% of the claims that are filed in any given year are folks who are seasonal and will go back to work to the employer. They're attached to an employer. About 58% of the claims we see in a year, they're permanent layoffs. So we do have this very, very seasonal dynamic. We're in our busy season right now. Minnesota also has one of the most technologically advanced systems in the United States. We were the first to fully automate all components, all three components of the unemployment insurance system. We're the first state to do that in 2007. In fact, the second state to do all three components that were integrated came up last year. So really there are only still two states where all three components of the program are automated and integrated. This is a system that works very well. 90% of our claims are filed online, and the other 10% come through a call center. And our call center at this time of year in a busy week, we can do anywhere from 30 to 35,000 calls a week. All states operate with online claims and call centers, and with our call center, I'm proud to say that we try to keep our wait times to under a minute, and we're the only state that can do that as well. There are 18 federal measures that we're measured on by the federal government. We're consistently in the top five states, and the other four states are much smaller than us. So we run a very efficient system. As you would probably guess, our volume is decreasing significantly. During the peak of the recession, I believe it was at one point in 2010, we actually had almost a quarter million Minnesotans at one given time drawing benefits. I believe this week, or last week rather, there were about 75,000 requests for benefits, and again, we're at a high point in the year. So, in fact, we recently did a press release in the fact that we last week sent out 1099s for the people we paid in 2014. We sent out 178,649 1099s. That compares to in 2009 we sent out 351,458 1099s. So the claims load is dropping, and the taxes are dropping. If you will recall, the legislature enacted and passed a tax cut two sessions ago that went into effect last year, calendar year 2014, enabling about $295 million tax cut to employers. There's a tail to that, an additional tax cut this year, as well as the fact that when we tax employers, there's a base tax rate that's assessed to every employer, and on top of that, there's an experience rating that's an additional tax based on their experience laying off people. And due to the fact that we look back 4 years to calculate the experience rates, the benefit year that just dropped off was a high benefit year. So experience rates will be plummeting this year. So we anticipate with the tail of the tax cut that the legislature passed 2 years ago, which would be about a little over $50 million this year, we think we project there will be about another $220 to $225 million cut to employers this year with declining experience rates. So basically the taxes are plummeting, and so an employer, just to give an example, an employer that would have a zero experience rating, if you're a small employer and you don't lay anybody off, you would have a zero experience rating. They would basically be paying $30 per employee this year in state unemployment insurance taxes. 2 years ago, they would have been paying $179 per employee. So again, I'm happy to say that the economic environment is such, claims load is down, taxes are falling. So the Minnesota program is in very good shape, and I think at this point, not knowing what you want to know, I'll probably just open it up to questions. If you need any more questions on the tax side or the benefit side, again, things are running very smoothly. We do have, by the way, this advisory council that helps oversee the public policy around unemployment insurance. It used to be a statutory council. It was taken out of statute in the early 90s when the legislature asked to remove a lot of statutory boards and councils, but we've been operating it all along. And almost anyone that has a vested interest in unemployment insurance policies on that council, the chambers there, organized labor, advocates like Legal Aid are there, the staffing associations. We have several legislators there. I believe three legislators from this committee are on our. Representative O'Neill has been on for a couple of years. Representative Mahoney is on the advisory council. And I'm not sure if Representative Gunther is on this committee, but he's been on the council for a number of years. And staff members also attend the council meetings. We convene the council every year to go over policy issues and vet the any potential statutory changes we need. And we usually have a bill every year because, again, we have to maintain conformity with federal law. And when we find issues that are either technical or housekeeping or conformity issues, we have to bring those forward. We vet them with the council. And if there's no controversy, we go forward and with a bill with the legislature. We probably will be having a bill this year. So at any rate, at this point, I think I'll turn it over to questions and answer any kind of questions you might have.
Sure. Well, let me start just a couple of quick questions. So in your handout, you mentioned that there is, when we were in a recession, Minnesota, any other state, when it's borrowing from the federal government, they charge us interest. Now at a time when we have a surplus, first question is, are our dollars held in the federal repository? Second of all, do they pay us interest?
They do. We get the interest that is applied to the trust fund. The state gets it, yes. Okay. They do pay us interest on the money we have in the trust fund.
Okay, good. Representative Scott, then Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is having to do with your budget and FTEs, and I'm assuming that during the recession your overall budget was higher and you had more FTEs. Has that declined now since things have leveled off a little bit more? And if so, if you have any of the numbers in your head, that'd be great. If not, you know, we could take those two by email.
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, members, there is a fluctuation. Obviously, during the peak of the recession, we had more staff. I think we were at peak at about 500 FTEs during the peak of the recession. I think we're down to about 380-some now. We did not have to lay anybody off. That was all done through attrition. So we have a lot of baby boomers. There's lots of retirements that are happening. You probably are aware that many state agencies have very aged workforce. And so we did not have to do any layoffs, as opposed to most states did. Also, our business model is such, because we use technology to such a high degree, we're very efficient, and so we probably have a smaller workforce than most comparable agencies do.
Representative Scott? Thank you. Representative Hortman, then O'Neill.
Thank you. I've used your online site as an employer, and it really works very well. It's very simple and straightforward, so I want to hats off to you on that system. With regard to the tax cut that we put into place 2 years ago, you know, you were saying for a small employer, for one employee with a 0% experience rating, you would have a charge of $30 a year. In the worst of the recession, you go to $179. What's the mechanism by which we adjust that back up? Did we do that in the 09 and 10 session? And then that's what we lowered in the 13-14 session?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the legislature did enact a tax cut. Probably didn't have to happen because we have automatic triggers built into the law that ratchet the tax rates up and down. However, it was, in my opinion, a very wise thing to do because we recovered quickly and the taxes would have gone down incrementally over the next 3 years, and it wasn't necessary to wait those 3 years, and so that's why the tax cut happened, and but we have triggers in the law, built in the law. So again, the basics of the state taxing system is that there's a base rate, and right now it's at the minimum, which is 0.1% of a certain taxable wage base for each employee. the taxable wage base is $30,000. And so 0.1% of that is the minimum rate right now, the base rate. That base rate can go up to 0.5 incrementally based on what's in the trust fund. And there are automatic mechanisms to do that. And so that would have worked, but it would have played out over a longer period of time.
Representative Hart.
Yeah, follow up. So on this upswing side, you know, when you need more money to pay out more benefits in a recession, does the trigger ratchet up pretty quickly on employers?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a lag. The whole system works with a lag. There's the unemployment happens, and it gets paid for eventually. So, but the mechanisms are in place, and when the economy is in recession, we're paying out huge payouts, and the fund is going down. At certain levels, those tax rates ratchet up.
Thank you. Very helpful.
Representative O'Neill, then Lunin. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Kirk, that was wonderful to work with you on the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. It was a lot of fun, and I did have the opportunity to tour DEED, and you are correct. It's one of the most efficient and organized agencies I have toured. It's wonderful. I do have a question about the trust fund. Right now, in your documents here, you said it's $1.4 billion. Where is kind of the sweet spot of where we would like it to be that, you know, to cover all of the expenses in a safe zone, so to speak?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the trick in maintaining this system and the public policy of the taxation side is to have a trust fund that is sufficient to be able to meet seasonal unemployment like we experience, again, being the most seasonal state in the United States, and also, you know, perhaps a minor recession. There's only one state that I know of that taxes high and keeps a gigantic trust fund and did not go into debt in the Great Recession. That's the state of Washington. But then they continually tax their employers at a high level. So, again, as you referred to, there's kind of a sweet spot. My own personal opinion is I think we're kind of at that sweet spot. Our revenue will go down a little bit this year. I think it's at its high point at $1.4 billion right now. But believe me, these funds can go fast. And when the Great Recession hit, we paid out about $1.6, $1.7 billion in six quarters and went from a little under $600 million in the positive to, you know, $600 and some million in debt. We eventually went to $700 million. And that can happen very quickly. But the federal government would like us to have more money. They have a measure called...
The government thinks we don't have enough money? The guys who rack up $600 billion a year say we don't have enough money. That's good. That's
the federal government has a rating for states, and they put out a report last March rating all the states in the solvency of their trust fund, and they kind of had us coming out of the red into the little pink area. I think that their estimates are overstated, and they use their methodology for calculating what's needed for solvency is a little overstated. But again, in concert with all of the, with business and organized labor and all the and legislators that are on the council and past legislators, I believe that the system worked well for this recession. We paid our way out very quickly. In retrospect, it was probably a wise thing. There are some states that bonded on the private market. It was probably wise that we not did that. Did not do that. The bonding folks were definitely approaching us because basically when the recession happened, the first thing Congress did with ERA was in the Stimulus Act was push money out to states to make sure unemployment insurance benefits and systems were working, paying unemployed people. And they actually did not charge us for the debt for the first 2 years. There was no interest. And then the interest kicked in on the third year. So in retrospect, our policy and the way we structure our fund worked very well. We climbed out quickly. Many states did not. As I said, still nearly 20 states. I believe Pennsylvania bonded, and I think that their bonds will not be paid back until 2024. I think we'll have another recession before then. So
statistically speaking, yeah,
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you.
O'Neill. Were you done, Representative O'Neill?
I do.
Yeah, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. And so it sounds like you are, we've got tax cuts coming yet. There were about $200 or $220 million yet, which would bring it down to that $1.2 billion. Is that kind of where we want to be, or is it closer to like $1 billion? Is there any room left to make, you know, maybe give a little bit back to the businesses, and are we kind of at where we need to be?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would feel very uncomfortable if it got below that. Again, $1.7 billion went out in seven quarters, so any even a minor recession, the payouts are huge. And our workforce is growing, so the liability side and the potential for payouts is climbing.
Representative O'Neill, follow? Are you done? Next, Representative Lunan, and then Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your presentation, you had stated that 42% of the people drawing have a seasonal aspect to their situation, 58% don't. I'm assuming you have data that shows the percentage on the non-seasonal, let's say, of those people that find other employment before their benefits terminate?
Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, we have...
What I'm looking for here is if we have the data, the difference between people who are seasonally drawing on unemployment and how active are they in seeking jobs, or are they just riding it out until the season starts up again? I think we all hear of cases where it's more beneficial to someone to draw and maybe the fish are biting, I don't know, and then wait for the season to start up again. I was just wondering if we had information on that.
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, people are allowed to a maximum of 26 weeks of state unemployment, and our exhaust rate is about, the last time I looked at it, at about 38%, and that would, of course, only be those who are the 58%. The other ones who are attached are going back to work. They go back to work. They do not exhaust.
Representative Lunan.
So the seasonal, I'm assuming there's data on this then, and the seasonal, so the 26 weeks, all right, so the winter would be over before then and they would be going back. So that wouldn't be confirmable then.
Mr. Chair, for the most part, that is correct.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Caligiuri, the 26 weeks, what is the window for that? Obviously, you can't be on for 26 weeks, work a week, and then go back to 26. What is the window for that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what you're getting at in your question.
A person is allowed to collect benefits for 26 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. And let's say they resume work after those 26 weeks. How long do they go before the 26-week clock resets again, where they could go back on unemployment benefits a second time?
Mr. Chair, members, basically the feds mandate a benefit year. So there are people, there are occasions where people will draw unemployment, get another job, get laid off a second time. If you are within a benefit year, it's an existing claim. So you would, that 26 weeks could be, you know, spread out anywhere within that benefit year. And then after the benefit year ends, then they have to establish a new claim. And again, that's federal law.
Representative Smith, you get the last word.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Caligiuri. The balance of $1.4 billion in the fund, what date is that from?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as of last week, we had a balance of 1.4, and that will go down through the winter.
Representative Smith,
is there any projection for 2015 as to what the balance will be at the end of that year?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I project that the peak balance for 2015 will be about $1.2 billion, if the economy continues as it is right now.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Caligiuri, in your information you wrote, or perhaps someone in your department did, that the federal recommendation is $1.8 to $2.5 billion, yet you mentioned that you felt that was too high?
Mr. Caligiuri.
Mr. Chair, again, it's a matter of public policy and how much you want to tax employers as to the size of your trust fund balance. So really it is a public policy issue for the legislature. My own opinion is I think that we're in a good place right now. We did recover pretty well from this last great recession. So I think the way the laws are structured now are pretty good.
Representative Smith.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Caligiuri, the interest rates that the state pays when we're in deficit and then that the federal pays the state, would you be able to provide those with us for us today?
Mr. Caligiuri?
Mr. Chair, I will have to get back to you with those.
Yeah. And if you could let us know if they're adjustable or fixed. Thank you. And Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Development Fund, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that really is not under my purview. It is an additional payroll tax of 0.1% that's added along with the state unemployment insurance taxes, but I think that's more under the purview of Deputy Commissioner Jeremy Hansen Willis. It's on the workforce side.
Representative Smith. All right, members, we're done for the day. Thanks, everyone. Good testimony from the commissioners, deputy commissioners, and we're adjourned.